Welcome to the Focus and Chill podcast, where we discuss productivity tactics that work for neurodivergent individuals.
Every episode, we interview guests with lived experience of neurodiversity who also have a solid productivity and habit game, and pass the learnings on to you, our wise and benevolent audience.
We're your hosts, Jeremy and Joey.
I'm Joey, and I coach creatives to get moving on their most ambitious projects through the power of solid habits and strong focus. I'm also a perpetual student of psychology and perpetually on a quest to a one-armed chin-up.
And I'm Jeremy, a neurospicy software developer turned startup founder, building the Focus Bear app to help people with ADHD and autism thrive at work. My cool party trick is leaving parties early so I can get to sleep in time for my two-hour-long morning routine. The Focus and Chill podcast is brought to you by Focus Bear, a habit and productivity app that makes healthy habits and deep work the path of least resistance. If you have a tendency to check emails or scroll through Instagram first thing in the morning, but long to develop a meditation and exercise habit first thing, Focus Bear can help you. The app blocks distractions on all your devices and guides you through your habits one at a time. Throughout the day, Focus Bear assists you to stay in deep work by blocking websites and apps that are unrelated to your chosen focus mode. Life's not all about work though. You'll be prompted to take regular breaks to rest your eyes and stretch your muscles. At the end of the day, Focus Bear helps you switch off. Work-related apps get hidden so you can unwind and sleep well. Check out the app by going to focusbear.io. Welcome to episode number 53 of the Focus and Chill podcast. We're thrilled to be joined by ST Rappaport today. ST is a brain engineer who works with ADHD entrepreneurs to unleash their potential via peak brain performance. ST assists them in optimizing their ADHD so they can remove overwhelm, get more done in less time, and enjoy growing their business again. Welcome to the show, ST.
Thank you so much, Jeremy and Joey, for having me. I am so excited. I really look forward to this conversation.
Yeah, likewise. I really enjoyed chatting with you on your YouTube show a while ago and really keen to ask you a few things. Starting off with, can you tell us about your experience with neurodiversity? When did you realize you weren't neurotypical?
From a really young age, knew I just wasn't, like, I didn't fit in. At the time, I did not know the term neurodiversity, and I gave all these different reasons and excuses as to why I was different, which some of them may still have had an impact, but most definitely, I did not like to think in a box, and I did not like school, and never liked anyone telling me what to do, so much so that I left school early. But I've never been officially diagnosed ADHD, though quite a few of my family members have been, so I most definitely have very high ADHD traits, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, school seems like a common negative experience for many people, me included. What were some of the things that were challenging during those high school? And was it mainly high school, or was it even younger than that as well that you found it as a problem?
Yeah, for me, it actually started really young. I remember the first day of first grade. So there's like pre-1A, which is like a little bit less like schoolish, right? And then there's like first grade, literally like walking down the hall to the classroom. I haven't even like started yet. And my teacher like shushing me to be quiet. And like, oh, not for me. Too much telling me what to do. And so high school actually surprisingly was like that bit better, but not enough for me to stick it out. At 16, after 10th grade, I wanted to like just drop out. And obviously my parents weren't very excited about that. And so what I did was I just took my GEDs, which, by the way, is a real cool hack because you could get your high school diploma 2 years before everyone else. I think everyone should do that. But then afterwards, I went to study in England for 2 years. So there was much more like college and what do we want? And that was fun. But what I really found really challenging about school was just having people tell me what to do. Like, don't tell me when to wake up. Don't tell me when to come to class, when to sit down, when I need to move. Like, let me just like do what I want to do. I actually really love learning, but not in a classroom setting.
I think that's very common. I'm not familiar with GEDs. Is that an exam that people have to do at the end of their high school in order to...
Yeah, so in America, every state has slightly different rules, but it's pretty common that if you don't get your... It's like four if you don't get your high school diploma. If you have your high school diploma, you don't need to do your GEDs. But if you, like, for some reason dropped out or have come from a different country and, like, don't have a high school diploma or things like that, then you take five tests. I mean, they're not fun, but like, it's not like these like really big tests that you hear in some states that like they have really hard ones. And I got that piece of paper stamped by the government, like I said, 2 years before everyone. And I was like, why are you still sitting in the classroom?
Hmm.
I love that hack. What were some of the key challenges that you faced after school?
So good question. I think that my biggest challenges actually happened during school. And during that transition period of those 2 years that I was in college in England, I really started doing a lot of like personal development work and getting into like finding my own ways and learning about myself, becoming like super self-aware. I've done some of that before, like in high school, but like those 2 years, I went like much, like way more deep. And I think that by the time I came home, I'm not saying like there's always challenges, but I felt much more in a place of where like much more empowered. I didn't feel like I had someone on top of my head telling me what to do. Like I never had a job. I always like did what I wanted to do and had my own businesses and things like that. I less felt the struggles of neurodiversity after school.
It sounds like you created an environment where you set up the conditions to thrive in terms of like doing the personal development and your own business journey.
Yeah, you
You didn't
got
have a
it.
boss
Like
telling you
even
what to do.
yeah, you think I listened in college either? Don't worry. I like rent I, at the time I did photography and I rented at a studio and instead of going to classes, I would like do photography for people. So yeah, no one told me what to do ever. And not since then. So like you
Love
said, I am a big believer in like you instead of like becoming the victim of like what could you do to create that setting around you to make it work for you.
Yeah, we're going to ask some questions about that in terms of how you create that setting. That sounds really cool. But just last question on this front, what were the businesses that you've run over that period?
Yeah, so the main one was the photography. And then I also got into something called Creative Journal Expressive Arts. I know it's a really long name for something really simple, but essentially it's about releasing your emotions, processing traumas, things like that through your non-dominant hand. It's really interesting how it like connects with your emotions part of your brain, things like that. And so, yeah, I had that. And there was also a point where I combined the two. I did that together with the photography. And then there was like also like some other consulting, marketing, just like some little random stuff because we always do 100 things, right?
I'll have to try that. I have tried sometimes writing with my left hand, but I can't read what I write.
It doesn't matter. You could literally scribble. You don't have to be able to read it. The point is the processing of it coming out. Because what happens is when we write with our hand, we usually used to write with, it goes down neural pathways in our brain that have always like it's gone. Like you wrote your name 100 times with your dominant hand, and it's going through that same path over and over again. However, on that pathway, there are a lot of blockages. There's all these signs, all these like barriers of different comments people have told us in the past or things that we've experienced that is making us not access either our emotions or our creativity or just whatever we're trying to get that we actually have inside us. So when you do it with your non-dominant hand, you're coming in through the back door where you don't have all these barriers. And so if you're ever like feeling high emotion, really stressed or angry or something, just scribbling with your non-dominant hand just like releases it. Or if like you have these ideas in your brain, but you're struggling to be able to express it, write it with your non-dominant hand, even if you can't read it, but it will be out of you. So then afterwards, when you can rewrite, like when you have to write it again with your dominant hand or type it or whatever it is, it's already come out. And so it's more forefront in your brain. It'll be easier for it to come out.
I'm going to try that today during my journaling time.
Yeah, me
Oh
too.
yeah, awesome.
I think
You have to let me know the results.
definitely will do. I think one other thing I've tried is it's not quite the journaling with your non-dominant hand, but I tried to eat breakfast with my non-dominant hand as well, which is anyone out there, try it. It's a lot harder than it sounds. Brushing my teeth with my non-dominant
Oh
hand as
yeah.
well. It's just so funny how like breaks you out of a pattern, I think. Yeah, I think it's a great idea as too. You're mentioning not wanting to follow rules, and I'd like to talk to you about sleep. And so that's probably going to be a point of contention because I think when we're from the time we're kids, we're being told when we need to go to sleep. And when we're adults, we're told we need to get 8 hours or like some arbitrary number. So I'd love to know a little bit more about your relationship with sleep and how you switch off at night.
So actually, when I make the rules for myself, it's fine. Right? It's when someone else that tells me. So if someone else is going to tell me to sleep for 8 hours, then I am not going to want to do it. However, I think as humans, especially when we're neurodivergent, then we want to understand the reason why we are doing something. What is the motive behind this, right? And so if I were to speak with an expert who were to tell me why I need to get 8 hours of sleep and go like take blood tests or show me signs and things like that. And then I come to the conclusion myself that that's what I want to do. I don't get 8 hours of sleep every night. I do love sleep for the sense that like I feel a difference when I'm not, when I haven't gotten enough sleep and my brain is operating the same way. And I know that I'm performing at my best. And so that is my motive for me, that I need to get the proper sleep that I should. Not always do I, but it makes it easier for me to go to sleep and wake up as much as possible at the same time.
I think it's just great to question the why behind things, right? Because so often we're just given these rules like climb the corporate ladder or like partner up and have 2.5 kids and all these things. And I think one of the great tragedies is a lot of people just go through their life without questioning why. I think it's great that you're bringing more of that into your life and probably the life of your clients as well. Like saying, okay, well, you need an adequate amount of sleep, but why is it 8 hours? And so I think that's just wonderful, ST. The second question I had for you is, how do you switch off at night? That was the second part of it.
I do two things. And I think because it's just a ritual, like it really helps and it's a trigger for the brain. You know, as someone who works with helping people in the brain, I'm very much into like what's happening in the brain. But there's two things I do every night while I'm like laying in bed. So the first one, obviously, you know how your brain automatically goes and like thinks about your day, is I like to think of three wins, three little wins that happened that day. And then also think of three wins that I plan for tomorrow. Obviously it doesn't always happen, but that is what I'm aiming for. So it really sets my brain in a positive mindset. And then what I do is I think of a very specific image, a very specific scene in my brain that I play and that really calmed me down. I have like a few times in my life where I can think like, oh, this at this moment in this hotel or in this place, like it was a really calming, relaxing state. And I just think about it and imagine myself that I'm in that state, or just bring myself back there, like feeling the memories of it. And it really calms the brain down and it goes back into like that state that it was at that time. And I find myself falling asleep really, really quickly. And if I'm ever not sleeping, I'm like, oh, I didn't think about that. And that's why I didn't fall asleep. And especially because I've been doing it for so long, by now it's like literally a trigger and it happens really fast.
I like that. I sometimes visualize myself skiing along this path that I skied along many times, and that seems to be very calming for me, a bit like counting sheep, but something a bit more personal. I'm curious about, you were saying that you definitely see the power of sleep, but sometimes you don't get enough. Is that something that you're working on, or it's pretty good at the moment and it's just a few days that sometimes it's not perfect?
Yeah, well, actually, I find it goes in seasons. It depends on what's happening in my life. Like right now, it's a season where it's really not and it's really, really bad. But I know that it's first season, and instead of like beating myself up that like, hey, like you're not getting enough sleep, it's like, okay, right now we're working on this specific thing and sleep is less of a priority. It sounds crazy because we really need the sleep. But for the most part, I really much focus my life, try to put my life in like priorities of like what is most important and literally list them out and make sure that I'm taking action based on those priorities. And sleep or health in general will usually be pretty high in that list, then it's easier.
What gets in the way for you in terms of getting to bed earlier, for example?
It usually is just a lot of things happening at once, a lot of big projects, a lot of deadlines and important things. I tend to know that it's going to happen. Like if I say yes to a project, I'm very conscious and I'm very aware of like, okay, this is going to add more time. And so I am saying yes to this, and it does mean that I will have less sleep.
I hope doing this podcast hasn't added another thing to your plate.
No, I love doing podcasts. They're so much fun, especially with you.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's something that I've experienced as well, that I say yes to so many things without thinking about the ramifications of it. And then it's like, oh no, now how am I going to get this done? Another thing you mentioned, overall health is very important to you. How about exercise? Is that something that you prioritize in your life?
Yes, that's been a priority, like even higher than sleep, for a very, 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 very long time. I do find that like different stages of my life, I do like get into different types of exercise because, right, we always like to change things up and make things a little bit more exciting. But because it's priority, I usually tend to start it first thing in the morning. I always say the more important something is, the more closer to the beginning of the day you want to do it. Try to run as soon as I wake up in the morning. And because it's part of habit, part of routine, it happens right away. Yeah, and like I said, right now, running marathons, and so that makes it fun.
Amazing. That's actually quite a lot of training then to train for a marathon. You're doing
Yeah,
20
it's
mile
crazy.
long runs and things like that.
Yeah, they're long, they're fun, they are hard, and there are days that you just want to give up, but you do it.
Yeah, I did some of them in the past, but now I'm mostly doing shorter stuff. How do you cope with long runs where you're on your own and there's not much stimulation? Do you use that as zen time or do you listen to things while you're running?
It really depends. I found that like runs up to 45, 60 minutes, I much prefer to, like you said, do a zen time, thinking time. I love that, just like being with my thoughts and being up there in my head. Once it starts getting a little bit past that mark, those thoughts turn into giving up thoughts. And so, as a distraction, it is slightly easier to be listening to things.
Yeah, I find the same. It's interesting because I do find that it's almost a better form of meditation for me than actually sitting down and meditating. The movement seems to help, but like you, I find after a certain duration, it starts to become rumination almost. So helpful to either run with someone else or listen to something.
100%.
Do you do other forms of exercise as well?
Well, as you know, when you run marathons, you're not, don't only run, you actually also have to do strength and cardio,
Yeah.
specifically strength. So yeah, so we stick some of that in, but running is most definitely a big one. And I also love swimming. So when I can, I do that too.
Love it. Must be an intense training regimen. How many hours per week do you reckon you spend on training?
Actually, not so much. It's like every morning, it's usually about 45 minutes ish, with Sunday being the exception. Sundays are long runs, and they tend to be about 2 hours unless it's getting close to a marathon, and then it's like three hours or so. But other than that, it's normal workout time.
And it probably sets you up really well for your workday.
Oh yeah, you feel a difference, and I think you know that.
Yeah, so SC, could you tell us a bit more about like the projects you might be working on during your workday?
As you know, I work with ADHD entrepreneurs. That is like the business, but everything in business has many, many projects to it, many, many parts to it. So obviously there's the actually working with the clients. And like I said earlier, I love podcast guesting. And so there's a lot of things related to that. There's hosting my own podcast, which is a very not regular formula, because like everything, I'm not listening to the rules. And so that's a big part. And just in general, marketing, everything else related to business, that tends to be my biggest projects. Outside of work, my projects are often related to travel. I absolutely love travel. And obviously researching before, learning about the country, learning about what's there, both from like a tourist then and being, I mean, like to like, I love like connecting with like the locals and learning about that. So that most definitely tends to be some really fun projects.
Yeah, nice one. And with your coaching ADHD entrepreneurs, what do you find most satisfying about that gig?
You have to just like see my face after every session and like answer everything. I'm literally like on drugs at that point. Like it's crazy. What I actually love is I know that the transformations that they're having means the rest of their lives are going to be easier. I don't like to like talk about like hacks and like ways like that you can like basically hack your ADHD, right? Like I actually want to make it easier for you. So you have all the amazing, beautiful superpowers of ADHD without it getting in your way. Sometimes more often than not, it's these like little shifts in our brains just haven't perceived the world in this way. And once you have this like understanding, it shifts everything for you. And your brain like views everything differently. And like you say, like once you see something, you can't unsee it. And so for the rest of your life, it's different afterwards. And that absolutely brings me so much joy.
That sounds really powerful. Could you give an example of a mindset shift that you've seen one of your clients have?
I actually work with my clients on improving the 28 thinking skills. Everything we do requires us to use these 28 thinking skills. Naturally, we all have stronger ones and weaker ones. Like everyone in the world uses them, and everyone has stronger ones and everyone has weaker ones. People with ADHD tend to have similar weaker ones, and that's why, in my opinion, people have ADHD. Obviously, there's other parts to it also, but like on a and a part level to it. I mean, so the type of perspective shifts that they'll happen are related to those thinking skills. So let's say something that like someone mentioned today, like they come to with these conclusions by themselves. It's like, I'm not there teaching them. They're doing brain exercises that work on their brain, work on these thinking skills, and they come to these conclusions. So let's say one person was really jumping from task to task, and we know how much that happens. And actually in a previous session, a different person in the group mentioned it, and she's like, there's like resistance to this. I don't want to try this. It's like, I actually need it. And then today she comes and she says, my resistance reduced. I was like, what happened there? She's like, I just realized it's a short-term trade-off for a long-term trade-off. It's like, yes, I can go and look at my phone and like respond to this ping, but like I'm trading off for the long time. I'm like, is that what I actually want to do? And there, it's just so simple, but so profound. And when a person's brain, not just like knowledge, but like when their brain understands it on a neural level where they make connections and it like just clicks in their brain, it's just like that forever. And then you cannot see that.
I like that idea of thinking about long-term versus short-term, but it being so hard to do, the resistance around not looking at the phone or not using some, I guess, adjustments or accommodations that aren't actually helpful. I often hear people talking, for example, about watching videos while they're working as a way to increase the stimulation level for something boring. But I think it's the same sort of thing, that it's a short-term payoff for a long-term reduction. Do you find it hard sometimes with people who have got their own strategies that actually seem wrong? Or are you trying to help people? They might have a strategy that seems wrong to you, but actually it works for them.
You're asking a very tricky question. You want me to be honest here, right? Well, we'll try to do this without offending anyone. I'll tell you what. I found in the public space, like in marketing, when people just like read what I put out online, gets a lot of resistance. A lot of people don't like it. Yeah. And people are like, yeah, you don't understand the neurodivergent brain, but we're different. We have less spoons, going on and on and on and on, and all different sort of things. And to me, I'm like, if you want to stay like that, you're more than welcome to, but I don't want to be like that. I want a higher quality of life. And so I am not going to resign to the fact that because of XYZ, this is the way my life is always going to be. Because I have less spoons, that's just going to the way my life is going to look like. Or because I'm time blind, then I'm just like always going to be late. I don't want to do that. I want a higher quality of life. And so those are the people that I'm speaking to. And those are the people that I work with. Now, there is nothing wrong with a short-term hack or a short-term strategy until you get to the long-term solution. Let me explain. If you need to solve a problem, this tax paper needs to get done right now. And the only way you are going to be able to help yourself be able to do it is by watching that video. And because if not, you're going to have like massive fines that you have to pay afterwards to the government. Go ahead and do it. You need that short-term strategy right now to help you. However, you want to solve the root issue as to why you always need that video. What is actually going on here? And it's deeper than you're just bored, or it's deeper than you're procrastinating. There are deeper reasons to it. Those are the reasons you want to solve. As you work on those reasons, you will need less and less hacks and less short-term strategies until eventually you won't need them at all. So as long as you're being conscious that I am doing this because I am putting on a band-aid until I get to the hospital and can get the surgery, then like, I think it's totally like, it's good. It's actually, like you said, we need to get this stuff done.
I like that approach. And I guess the idea is don't keep on using band-aids when you don't need them anymore.
Yeah.
We've spoken about some tactics that you use for your own productivity, including, I guess, starting the day with a run to get your brain into good working order. What are your other strategies that are some band-aids and some longer-term surgery options?
Yes. Okay. So where are we starting? Band-aids or long-term?
Band-aids, I think.
Band-aids first. Let's do it. Okay. First of all, you always want to be working with your brain, not against your brain. Super important. So you want to understand how your brain is working and your brain functions. And even like, as you listen to this podcast or as you learn tips, like there are different things that work for different people and you want to take what works for you and leave what doesn't. But personally, what I do, short-term strategy, I want to always bring the task to the sweet spot of a challenge. What happens is we have challenges that are too easy that afterwards become boring and we're not interested in them. And we have challenges that are too difficult that afterwards we become discouraged and we don't want to do that. And so you want to bring a challenge to the sweet spot challenge, a task, the sweet spot challenge, where it's not too boring, but it's not too difficult. And if a task falls on one end of the spectrum, what can you do to bring it back to the middle? If it's super boring, can I find a way, challenge myself to do this a bit more challenging? Or if it's too challenging, can I break this task and find a way to make it a bit easier? So that's one that I absolutely love. Another one I like to do actually really is not a very productive way of working. But when you don't have patience doing work, for me, I found this, like literally this is a lifesaver. This is like a really good short-term strategy. So, you know, I forgot what it's called. It's like when you turn on timer for 25 minutes and you work for 25 minutes and you take a break afterwards for 5 minutes, quite popular in the ADHD.
Pomodoro technique.
Yes, exactly. So I like to do it with a different twist. I take between 5 to 10 tasks, depends what I have to do, and put them in a list. And then I turn on a timer for 10 minutes and I do the first task on the list for 10 minutes. As soon as that task timer rings, I don't care what, I am stopping and going on to the next one. And just when that timer rings, I go on to the next one. And the reason why this works is one, you're constantly changing. And so you don't get bored. Like, you know that like it's just for 10 minutes and I'm just going to do this. Second, because you have to stop by that 10 minute mark and you don't let yourself go more, you are going to stay focused and you're going to try to work fast and try to get it done. And then it's super fun that like when you cross things off the list, so before you had 6 things and then now you only have 5 things and you rotate it through it faster. And obviously, like I said, it's really not a productive way because you want to often do things as much, like for as long as possible is really a way more productive way of working. But that's not it. And then, of course, sticking in there those breaks, because that is super important. I think we don't understand that there's a point where there's like a diminished return on what we're doing, like literally back to the science, because I like the science. But often, like, we're working and working and working on something, but the results of the amount of work we're putting in to the amount of results we're getting out is not working because we need those breaks. So you really want to make sure that you're getting those in there.
Yeah, I love it so much that we're going to take a break right now.
Hi there, Focus and Chillers. Are you ready to supercharge your knowledge in the realms of creativity, tech, and psychology? Come check out my fortnightly newsletter. In each edition, you'll get quick wins and actionable takeaways that you can put into practice right away. If this sounds like you, I'd love to have you as a reader. Subscribe for your fortnightly dose of insights. The link is in the show notes. And now, let's get back to the show.
Okay, we're back from our break. We're hydrated and ready to learn more about the longer-term productivity interventions that you have.
Whenever I'm procrastinating, I like to use it as a sign. There is a reason why your brain is procrastinating. Your brain does not like to work hard. It's literally wired for survival. And so it is always going to choose the easier task to do, right? And so as soon as a task is challenging, your brain is going to procrastinate on it. If you think about it, you never procrastinate eating chocolate because it's easy for your brain. And so whenever you are procrastinating, you want to use that as a sign, is what part of this task is challenging. Now, sometimes it's easy. It's like you have to write this report and it's like, right, okay, this whole thing is just challenging. And like, you know, it's hard, you dread it. And like, that's why you're procrastinating on it. Often the challenge part actually shows up as boredom. Or as like just not interested, or just like a very rotating task, like or a task that you just like do over and over again, things like that. But it's actually, when you take the time to think about it, and I'll show you what to do, then you pinpoint the exact part that's a bit challenging for your brain and you don't want to do it. So here's what I'm going to do. Whenever you find yourself procrastinating, like this is what I do, I should say, and I suggest that you do the same, is you want to ask yourself, what part of this task does my brain not like? So if you think of, let's say, responding to an email, right? Have you ever procrastinated on responding to an email?
Yep, I've got right? one.
Yeah, exactly, right? When you think about it, there's actually a million little pieces that go into responding to an email. You have to open the email. You have to read the email. You have to understand the email. You have to figure out what you are going to say. Then you actually have to write it out in a sentence that they can understand. And then you have to proofread it. And I could go on and on, right? Which part of this whole process does your brain not like? Does it not like the fact that it has to decipher complex words to figure out what the email is saying? Does it not like the fact that it has to decide on an answer? Does it not like the fact that it has to formulate the response coherently in a way that the other person can understand? What part of this does it not like? That is the part that you want to work on. That part is actually related to those 28 thinking skills that I mentioned earlier. But you don't have to know the 28 thinking skills. If you don't know them, it's totally fine. You want to understand the part of it. So if let's say, for example, you say like, hey, you know what? For me, the part that's really challenging, and this is actually true, like this is what was coming for me, is formulating the response in the best way possible, in a clear, organized way for the other person to be able to read it. Then that's what you want to work on. In all areas of your life, anytime you have to express yourself, you want to take the extra moment to figure out, how can I express this in a clear, cohesive manner? And what's going to happen is, anytime in your life where you have to express yourself in a clear, cohesive manner, is all of a sudden going to start getting easier because you've worked on the root issue as to why you don't like writing emails. And you don't have to find a way to hype yourself up to answer emails. Your brain actually now has an easy time doing it and has no problem responding to those emails. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay. So it's sort of identifying a weak skill there and strengthening that skill and looking at the barriers to it. Is there also an aspect of, if your job is composed mainly of tasks that you don't enjoy and that you're having to amp yourself up for it, is that a sign that maybe it's the wrong job? Could that be part of the longer term productivity tactics as well?
100%. 100%. Like we mentioned earlier, you always want to work with your brain, not against it. I will most definitely recommend you to change jobs. Whenever I ask someone what they do, always my second question afterwards is, are you happy? Like, do you like your job? Always. Like, no matter if it's their own business or they're working for, like, it's always like that. Because I really think that's a big component. But if you want to be smarter about this and take this to the next level, after you change your job and when you're in a slightly better space, then ask yourself what part of that job you didn't like, because probably it's showing up in other areas and it's affecting you in other places. And so if you can identify what those thinking skills are, I'm going to improve that, then maybe keeping your house organized will be a little bit easier, or communicating with your friends and family will be a little bit easier, etc.
Yeah, definitely. You can't escape some of those challenges there entirely, even if you travel to another country.
Right. No matter how much we try to run away from it, we always bring our brain with us.
It's a cosmic joke, isn't it? We try to escape, but we always bring ourselves with us. So it's yeah. And speaking of the travel you mentioned before, are there any other things that you like doing in your off time, ST?
That is most definitely a really, really, really big one. Another one that I tend to do often that just I absolutely love is having deep conversations, either with close friends or also with strangers, is super fun. Like, I don't like what's the weather style, small talk. I love going deep. Those tend to be the big ones. There are some other things that, just talking about priorities, have been really pushed into the bottom of that list, but art, painting, dancing, like freestyle, things like that. But those most definitely I do not do.
Yeah. I love the conversations with strangers thing. I really wish I had more courage to do it. I probably do it more than most people, but I probably don't take every opportunity I can. I think one of the things that comes up for me, ST, is that I think I get into a bit of a time scarcity thing. So I might be walking to do the groceries and stuff, and then maybe I might be at the traffic lights or something. And I'll just be like, why not just strike up a conversation with this person that's next to you? But it's like, oh, because I'm on my way to do the groceries. I got things to do today, right? Is that something that ever comes up for you, that feeling of time scarcity? And if so, how do you reframe it so that you do it more often?
Yeah, so it's actually something that majorly struggled with. Like, majorly, I really like have my planned time and like I want to do what I'm doing. And if you come up to me in the grocery store and try to talk to me, I'm not going to be interested in talking to you. Sorry. I'm there to do my groceries. And so before I tell you how I reframe it, I will just add about like talking to strangers. I tend to find it in certain situations. Like I know I am going in to talk to strangers. So if like I'm a networking event, like this is a moment where I'm going to talk to strangers and I'm going to try to get, like, I'm just going to go deep, right? Or on a podcast or whatever it is. But back to how I reframe the time scarcity, I don't think it's so much as like a scarcity as in like, oh no, I don't have enough time for it. Versus back to my priorities of like, it's more important for me to get this workout done. Or I'm choosing to get this work task done because I prefer that over speaking to the stranger. And but like we said earlier, it's like the short term versus the long term.
Yeah, I love that. The time scarcity and the whole idea of I don't have time to do X. I like the way you look at it, ST, because the bottom line is it's all about choices, isn't it? It's all about I'm either going to choose to roll the dice and talk to this stranger or choose to go and do my groceries and because of the things that I've got prioritized later on today. And so I think that's an excellent way of looking at it. I love nerding out about this stuff. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is you don't like making small talk and neither do I. What I enjoy doing is like taking small talk questions and then putting a slightly different spin. Not so much that it's like you're asking them about their deepest, like what's the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to you, but like something like, what do you do? And I love how you said, you also asked, do you enjoy that? And I think that's an excellent spin. Do you have any other favorite questions for, I guess, breaking that pattern of small talk?
Yeah, one I really like, and people actually really appreciate it, is what's been the highlight of your week. It's like everyone likes to talk about good things. And the first sentence may sound like a small talk, but it's usually a very big doorway to something a lot deeper. And then you could like play by ear based on what that person wants. Because yes, do not ask them their deepest, darkest secrets in the first 3 seconds you met them.
Yeah, I love what you're talking about with opening the door, like keeping the door ajar. And if they want to come through, then you can invite them through, but you're not forcing them through it. I think that's an excellent way to start any connection.
Absolutely. We spoke about the serendipity of talking to strangers versus the routine of grocery shopping. Do you have a routine for your morning and what does it look like?
My routine for the morning is actually really simple. I work best in the morning. My brain is sharpest in the morning. I know as the hours go on, less and less like productive work is going to happen. And so I always like to start my day as soon as possible, obviously after my workout, because that just helps the productivity, right? After workout and the shower is right away into the most important task. So it's not a major morning routine. It's just like getting myself focused. One of the things I really do to help me is to prepare everything the night before. So I always plan my day the night before, but I also put out everything that I can to make it as easy as possible. So obviously that includes workout clothes, but I also open up any documents on my laptop that I think I'll need, any papers, everything is out there in front of me. So as soon as I'm ready, I can just like sit down and work and not have to go through the struggle or the like those barriers of opening the stuff, finding out where it was, things like that. And I could just stay focused on what I need to do.
Yeah, I find that really important too. The last thing I want first thing in the morning is to be dealing with where did I put that document or where is that task. It really destroys the momentum. So I like that you're basically starting the day with a running start, both literally with the run and from the preparation before. Is that something that you've always done? Because the starting the day with the hardest thing is quite a challenging mental gymnastics art to do.
Probably not my whole life. I can't remember when that switched. There were points in my life that like I was also did like more of the morning routines with like journaling and other things like that until I realized that like it's just more of a distraction than like of what I'm actually like trying to get it to for me, at least. Like I love journaling. For me, I found like it works much better at night, like journaling my day and or if there's like a challenge, things like that. But in the morning, my brain is just, I'm such a morning person. Like some people like off many people take the time to like warm up to work up. My brain is like so sharp in the morning and there's like literally there's no point in like trying to put any barriers in between that. And so like always we like to work with our brain and that's what I try to do.
Yeah, that sounds like a wonderful morning routine. Estee, where can people connect with you or find more about your work?
Yeah, You can connect with me anywhere on online at Life Picks University. So whatever your favorite social is, that would be Life Picks, P-I-X, University. And if you want to find out where you're standing with each one of the 28 thinking skills, you can take a free cognitive function assessment, an assessment that goes through these 28 thinking skills at lifepicksuniversity.com/brain. That's lifepicks with an X, university.com/brain.
Awesome. We'll include that link in the show notes. Do you have any final words or asks for the audience?
Just that this is so much fun. I absolutely love it. Thank you so much for having me. And I will say though, I personally had my biggest like freedom when I stopped caring what other people think. I know it's like super cliche, but until you're actually doing it, you need to hear it. Like, just go and do it. So if you're feeling really stuck and a lot of things are stopping you and you're just like not able to do what you want to do, just don't think about anyone else and just live your life.
Love it. Thanks so much, ST.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Focus and Chill podcast. To listen to other episodes, jump onto podcast.focusbear.io. If you'd like to be a guest on the show or you know someone who'd be a good fit, email us at team@focusbear.io. Otherwise, stay focused, stay chilled, and peace out.